Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Haddit.com Radio Show. Haddit.com Radio is an in-depth look at all things VA. If you need help with the VA, log on to Haddit.com. Now, here's your host, Gerald Cook.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, on this 30th day of November, 2017. We're here with our co-host, Jay Basser, and today our guest speaker is Travis Studdard with Perkins and Studdard Law Firm there in Georgia, and they specialize in VA law. And hopefully we're going to get some good information today. But before we get into that, wanted to mention this story out here about the liver flukes. People that served in the Asian theaters, Vietnam and probably Cambodia and all them countries over there, and Thailand, I think one of them. If you served there and you ate the kind of raw fish or undercooked fish and drank the water, there's a strong possibility you could have liver flukes, and you need to see your primary care physician, whether you go to the VA or outside the VA, and get tested for it, because there's tests for it, and you sure don't want to end up with liver cancer. There's already been numerous veterans that's passed on due to liver cancer, and they're finally pinning it down to this liver fluke. But anyway, we'll get on with the show, and if any of you have any questions or comments, please call in. Our number is 347-237-4819. Now, its number, once again, is 347-237-4819. And then if you hit the 1 after the lady talks there, it'll put you in the queue here with us. And we'll keep an eye out. We see a new number pop up, we'll break in and ask you if you have any questions or comments. So how are you doing today, Travis?
Well, I'm doing great, Gerald. It's good to be with you. I've listened to your podcast some, and excited to get a talk with you guys this evening, and hopefully spread some good information to everybody else out there as well.
Well, that's right. You did mention that you had some heads up for us, new things coming down the BA pipeline, and hopefully it'll be good news.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think the jury's still out on it at this point. It may be a little bit of a mixed bag, but I think there's going to be some good improvements that veterans can use if they kind of understand this new system. And of course, what we're talking about is this Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act that recently went into law. But real quickly, going back just a minute on your comments about the liver flukes for Southeast Asia veterans, you were mentioning getting tested, and I was reading up on this. You and I had a conversation about it, and one of the things I saw about it is how, what a silent disease this can be, and essentially until it gets into the late stages of this bile duct cancer, a lot of times these people that are infected with it really have no symptoms at all. So, and unfortunately at that point, there's not a lot of treatment many times, and it can be fatal in most cases. So I would just echo what you said in terms of if you were in that theater and think you may have been exposed, get tested. Your doctor can do some lab work and see if you have these liver fluke antibodies in your body that would possibly indicate infection. And then in the early stages, I think hopefully they can treat that before it turns cancerous, because basically it inflames the bile duct and intestines to the point where eventually it develops cancer, and then that's when you start having the symptoms. So, unfortunately, I think
if they can catch it, Travis, before it leaves that dormant stage, it can lay dormant for, I don't know, evidently a lot of years. But if they can catch it before it does that, there's a chance. Of course, the earlier they can catch it, the more better your odds are. But
right.
Once it hits that, breaks out of that dormant stage, then it's, I don't know. Anyway,
well,
you,
and
you
what,
need
you,
to investigate it.
and if somebody, and we all see this so much, I mean, there's so many veterans that are eligible for some type of benefit or a dependent of a veteran, and they simply don't even know that there may be something available to them as a result of that person's service. And, if this is a pretty rare form of cancer from what I understand. So if you've got a loved one or a buddy that died of this bile duct cancer, his dependent, his wife may have a DIC claim at that point, because, again, this is just extremely rare in our part of the world, but it's, I think millions of people in Asia are affected. So, there's a pretty good case to be made of a connection between your Vietnam service and this cancer. So, look into that possibility as well. So getting to this, new appeals legislation, this President Trump signed this into law, I think it was August 23rd of 2017, and that's really just the enabling legislation that Congress passed, and which means that really what we have at this point is a framework, kind of the big broad strokes of what this new system for claims and appeals is going to be moving forward, and then the Department of Veterans Affairs will make the actual rules that we use, the Code of Federal Regulations. That'll be all the more detailed information that we'll need to see as far as how this will be enacted and how they'll be handling it. And in terms of when all this goes online, I think it's supposed to be in about the 18 months from passage, so that would be, I'm thinking probably end of 2018 they'll be putting this into effect, if they stick to their schedule, which we know how that goes as well. So but it is coming at some point, so I thought it may be a good idea for everybody to kind of get an overview of what may be coming with it. And, you were saying hopefully it's good news. I think it is in a lot of respects. I mean, certainly something needed to be done. Everybody listening to this knows how broken the system's been for years and years. And, there's been a lot of talk over what to do and how to do it, in terms of fixing that. But, we finally got something, and I think it's something that we can work with, and I think the goal was really to get the claims, the appeals backlog to go down rather than rising, which is what it's been doing here in recent years. So
Let's hope. Travis, we have a caller in here. Caller, you in there?
Oh, I sure am, Gerald. Travis,
it's Berta
Simmons from New York. And
hey,
I'm glad Gerald got my email about you because I'm very impressed with that fairly recent decision that you had at the BVA. However, I'm not going to go into that at this point. I have a question maybe at the end of the show about it. I think you're talking about H.R. 457. Secretary's office told me I had some input into that. However, Shulkin, I have another letter to send him regarding another issue, which I think could help stave off some of the backlog. And I have another question on that for you. But I'm glad to meet you, and I'm very happy that you are on our show. So I'll keep quiet and let you go on ahead. I've got the BVA award in front of me, and I think it'll be interesting discussion later on in the show.
Okay. Well, in terms of this, what they call the Improvement and Modernization Act, it's done quite a few things. It's going to change the landscape, and I can run through a couple of these, and you guys can jump in and we can talk about it. But first off, your things that are gone, your statement of case, we're getting rid of that, which we know how long sometimes we wait on those to come to us. And one of my favorite parts of this, I think, is the Form 9 is going away. And, you know, to me, that's just been a landmine for so many veterans. After they filed their NOD, they think they've appealed their claim. And of course, you have that 1 year to appeal it, which in my opinion is quite a generous time frame given other areas of law to have a year to appeal it. However, you know, the problem with the Form 9 is you only have 60 days to file that after your statement of case. And I think we've probably all seen folks who call you on day 70 or 62 or what have you, and you have to tell them the bad news that their appeal is over with because they didn't file their what's really their second appeal, right? I mean, you file your NOD and then the Form 9, so we're getting rid of that, thank goodness. We also here's some of the bad news, I think, is the duty to assist in part will be going away in the appeals phase. Right now, you know, VA has a duty to assist you throughout the entire process, I think in part of their goal was to speed up the process, and one way to do that is relieve part of their obligations in this whole arena. So they're basically saying we have a duty to assist you on the initial application, but once we issue a decision, we're done. We fulfilled our obligation. And of course, that's really problematic when they have a lot of the information that we need, right? I mean, they have the records, they have the file. And so I think some veterans are going to be hurt by that. And I would imagine there'll be some challenges down the road in terms of some lawyer brighter than me is going to challenge that, and if that affects somebody's constitutional due process rights. But that's something that is a big change that we don't have right now.
Excuse me, Travis, I think that would be devastating. They don't really assist. They ignore that duty to assist. That's why we have so many remands. It's because they didn't fulfill their duty to assist. And when a veteran asks for information, they don't always get it because the VA says they can't find it.
Right.
And you hound them. And finally, after it's remanded enough, somebody will cough it up. There it is. It was there all the time.
Right.
Carol, sometimes the veteran that can do that themselves. I always say follow the remand if you can. I don't know how they're going to revisit the VCAA or amend it or do it away with it completely. But, well, the duty to assist is so limited that, Travis, in my opinion, and I've been doing this for 34 years, a lot of it's up to the veteran. They should write to Joint Services Records Research Center themselves. They should get their personnel file as well as their SMRs. I mean, it's amazing how you can do this. And I say this from experience. I had a claim, one claim at the BVA. I've been a claimant multiple times as the widow of a veteran FDCA 1151 and then two subsequent direct service-connected DIC awards. So I got four DIC awards. So they can't take anything away from me because I'm a hellraiser with the VA. However, I told the board that my VCA rights were violated, and I asked them to remand the claim back to get it fixed. You would not believe the problems I had, even getting my so-called service officer and the director of my state POA to support me. And I was right. I filed quite a complaint against them with the general counsel on this. But the long run, this is in the long run what happened. It was remanded, but it didn't say anything about the VCA violation. They remanded for an additional medical opinion from a cardio doctor, which I went whoop-de-doo over that. I already had three independent medical opinions, and they wanted to get another one to even their score, if you catch my drift.
Right.
And I got a PA opinion. I knocked it down in a heartbeat and sent my rebuttal to the BVA. And within a very short matter of maybe a month and a half, I got a decision from the BVA in the mail, and I threw it on my desk because I figured it was too fast to come. And I had gotten BVA decisions in the past that had nothing to do with me. I had to get in touch with their service officers and tell one guy, hey, you're veteran one. And I had to call the DAB and say, hey, your guy lost, but here's what you got to do. But in any event, in the final decision from the BVA, they awarded my claim. They said that I did have a VCAA violation, but I had mitigated the damage of that with evidence. My evidence was overwhelming. Unfortunately, they didn't mention it all in the it's at the board, and I felt that a lot of that evidence would have been very probative to other survivors in similar circumstances. But in any event, there's a lot of responsibility we claimants have. I'm a hardcore claimant. I found that out years ago when I found out some of these regional offices can barely read, you know.
Right.
But in any event, I'm going to ask one of my questions. I only have two, maybe three. Have you ever considered asking them to call a queue on themselves within the appellate period? In other words, I mean like within days or a few weeks after the veteran that you represent has gotten the decision from the RO.
No, I mean, I haven't done that.
Okay. I'm trying to get Secretary Shulkin to issue a fast letter on that. I gave him, I've had a lot of experience with it. Favorable experience. Two or three veterans that had it have followed my advice on how to do it. They succeeded, and I wrote a letter to the secretary today and on another issue, but I also reminded him that I did make a good specific argument as to why he should issue that fast letter, because fast letter would be a lot easier than amending Title 38.
Mm-hmm.
And but okay, but thank you for that answer.
I think you certainly could, and it's a good.
Well, I've got the proof of the success of it. The secretary has my CFIL number. The White House has it. They checked me out. You know, and there's so much in the CFIL. So, I mean, if they, you know, Shulkin, about 2 weeks ago, and I love Secretary Shulkin. He's the best one we've ever had, in my opinion, over the last 34 years. He stated to the press for the first time that he realized the claims process is, in fact, arbitrary. You know, like, duh, you know, like, we all know that. But it's the first time a secretary ever said that, and I thought that was rather gracious of him because, you know, he's still learning 101 VA, you know. I mean, he's
right.
And a civilian. But, well, that's all I got to say on that. I could talk about that a whole day, though.
Yeah, and for any, you know, any of the cabinet-level officials, I mean, I think VA secretary has to be one of the most challenging. I mean, it's, you know, second largest bureaucracy you know, and unfortunately, unlike DOD, which a lot of those have at least some familiarity and that's not always the case on the VA side of things. So they have a steep learning curve. I'll give them that. Any of us getting into this do. So,
I think he's a good man. I make my prayer group pray for him. You know, we all need prayers when it comes to the VA.
That's for sure.
But I'll let you get back to your conversation with Gerald. It's very interesting.
I think, Berta, you hit the nail on the head at the beginning of those comments that on the one hand, I think the duty to assist can help a veteran sometimes with in terms of what their appeal rights are. But I would caution anybody to sit back and rest on their laurels and wait for the VA to actually comply with the duty to assist.
Right.
You know, that's not a recipe for success. And like you said, you've got to hunt this stuff down. On occasion, you know, there may be things that we simply don't know that they exist, and therefore that may trigger something on their part. But but again, I agree. If you know there's a record out there, you need to be hunting it and finding it and submitting it yourself rather than waiting for VA to do it.
You know, and there's a lot of things like Joint Service Records Research Center. They had a guy working there. He was screwing up Thailand Agent Orange veterans' claims like a dope. And I hope that they straighten out that fiasco. I hope the veterans that were adversely affected have found out. I mean, this was on the Internet from a good source. But, you know, a lot of veterans, a lot of them still don't use the Internet.
Right.
One of the vets I helped my former POA like a dope while they were screwing my claim up. He asked me to help a couple of his clients because he didn't know what he was doing. He ran the vet rep office for the state of New York. Well, to make a long story short, the VA had told this veteran that his SMRs had been destroyed in the St. Louis fire.
Just like every other veterans, right?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, this veteran did not enlist until after the St. Louis fire.
Funny how that happens, right?
Yeah, isn't it? And I think that stuff like that happens more than they know. He was Air Force. My daughter's Air Force. Luckily, she's only had one claim with the VA, and they screwed that up. Through VA Educational Department. They owed her 1 month and 7 years at DEA. They gave her 1 month. She called me up cursing so much, I thought she joined the Marine Corps. And I filed Q on that, and about 4 weeks later, she told me she got her proper certificate of entitlement. I wrote the Q like I was her, you know.
Right.
And you know, what gets me, Travis, is that, like, DEA, the regulations for veterans are right there on the form. And she attached a copy of her DD-214, 7 years, U.S. Air Force Intel. Yet, they didn't even, they breezed right over it. I think these errors, sometimes I think they're for spite. Sometimes I think they're ordered to be stupid. But on the other hand, there's a lot of very good employees at the VA system. I know a lot of employees that work for VA that are superb. But I think some of these raiders are just sitting around waiting for their FERS retirement and check to kick in with their, you know, their, I forget what they call it, the contributions from their from themselves.
Right.
And what have they got to lose if they make mistakes?
Well, and that gets to, I mean, you're right. I think there's, I think some of it can be perhaps malicious at times. Some of it's incompetence. I think a lot of it as well is just, you know, these folks are, a lot of them do have crushing workloads. I mean, they need more funding. They need more people there reviewing claims and that sort of thing. And
yeah,
like any bureaucracy, they're getting work credits for churning out decisions, right?
Right.
And so
right.
It's not based on, you know, in private sector, we would be looking for accuracy and efficiency. And here they're looking to check off that box and move it to the done pile and pick up
yeah.
the new one. And then that's
yeah.
how they're being evaluated. And when that's the case, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter if you look at the records or consider the evidence or not. You did your job, and you, when you consider your job to be, issue a decision, right or wrong. And that's one of the fundamental issues in this whole debacle that's been, you know, evolving for years and years. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if Congress really addressed any of that. Perhaps in the Accountability Act, hopefully, some of that, the other sort of sister legislation that they've done. But, you know, I don't necessarily see anything in this necessarily
no.
that's going to address that part of,
no.
of the problem. But
no.
if you do know I think as it all shakes out, we'll kind of see, you know, where the good people are and which route you want to take, because you're going to have several different avenues once you receive your ratings decision under this new system of where you want to go with it. You know, in the past, we've had you file your NOD and you can go the DRO route, or what they call the traditional review process. They have something similar to that still. They call it a higher level review. And again, that's going to be more senior people. I don't think they use the term decision review officer, but so that's one way you can go with it. Now, a big difference under this higher level review as compared to the DRO process we currently have is this new system that would have no new evidence that you're able to submit on your appeal. So, which again, you've got three options, so you don't have to take that one. But if you go that route and select that, then you're not going to be able to submit anything additional, which again, that's why I, you know, Jay was talking to me before the show about how I, well, you know, my take on VA law from the practitioner standpoint. And I love it in the sense that, you know, the record doesn't close once a case is decided, as opposed to other areas of law, and we can keep adding evidence. And that's a huge benefit to veterans. But under that option number one, they won't have that option anymore, so or ability to add evidence.
Hmm.
Now, the other, another way a veteran can go if they're dissatisfied with their decision is you can still file an NOD on your claim, but like I said, it doesn't sit in the regional office at that point. You're gonna, if you file an NOD, that is like your Form 9 in the sense that an NOD sends it to the BVA at that point. So it's
leaving. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah,
BVA
and it, you know,
great.
right? You know, they can read. They have, as a general proposition, a much better understanding of VA law. So not that they, you know, nobody gets it perfect, but
yeah.
Well, you know,
Travis,
you
why don't they just close the regional offices and hire a whole bunch of good lawyers and put them in the BVA and have satellite BVAs all over the country, because the BVA lawyers are, in my opinion, superb. They do make mistakes. I read BVA decisions every day.
Right.
They make mistakes here and there, and if they do, there's always a CABC, you know, or filing a motion for reconsideration or something like that.
Right.
But in a perfect world, for me, that's the way it would be.
Right.
I
mean,
know that sounds ridiculous. What do you think, Gerald?
Well, I think I don't like the idea. I like, for instance, I have went through, the BA has sent me 3 different claim folders over just a few years here. Now, they've contacted the law firm I'm working with and notified them that because there was information that they had that wasn't in the last claim folder.
Right.
So now they're going to have to generate a new claims folder that will make 4 claims folders in a period of 16 years.
Boy.
Now, if we go this route here with the duty where they don't have to assist, and someone runs across that same predicament, they've lost out. They don't have a chance because, first of all, the VA's sitting on the information and refuses to release it. Now, that's the reason I would be against something like that, and especially on the appeals. Once you send the appeal in, it's over and done with. And then all of a sudden, the BA will come along. Well, they probably won't come along and say, yeah, because we have this, or you find out that there's additional documents that's been not included in your... Sometimes you don't find out till way down the road that they even exist. Then when you ask for them, it takes you forever to get the VA to cough them up. And so you run into a situation like mine. I know mine might be of the exception, but if it happened to me, I'm sure it's happened to others.
Well,
right.
It does. I had to deal with the my regional office's MF. The mysterious force that removed stuff from my C file until they could deny my claim, and then they put it back in. And what it was a peer review report that they did for my FTCA case within 3 months after regional counsel got it. He called me up and told me he wanted to settle with me right away. The peer review report supported my charges. And then you know what happened? The regional council disappeared. Actually, they forced him into retirement. I called him at his house to see what happened. The chief director of local VA was fired and then had to sue them to get his job back and decided he'd quit anyhow and take his retirement. Both of these men assured me that that report was in the hands of VA. I didn't find it until about 6 years later. It was right at the bottom of my C file. So I used it for my Agent Orange IHD claim. But, things like this, they disturb me because, to me, someone had a deliberate effort to remove that critical report from my CFAL. And at the same time, I had sent in 12 copies of an autopsy that supported my charges. And they kept denying my claims, never mentioning the autopsy at all. But in any event, I won the FTCA and the 1151. And I wonder if I'm an isolated case, but none of us are, Gerald. Travis Carroll has had a terrible time with the VA, going through what he went through. But he never gave up. I don't know where he's at this point with his claim, or if he even has a claim pending.
Yes, I do.
Oh, good.
It's on appeal, and we're waiting on the VA. They've had three or four extensions, and then this they come out with they sent a letter stating that they was going to generate a new claims folder, which would be my fourth one. And
but you have a claim pending at the regional office?
No, it's up in Washington there.
Oh.
Is that the BVA at this point?
Yeah, it's up there.
Oh, I've known you for 15 years. I've been missing out, Gerald. You don't call me every day like you used to.
Well, we used to talk every day. Don't
I know.
Actually, I think it's headed to the CABC, is it, Gerald?
Huh?
I think you're headed to the court, ain't you? You're past the BVA. Yeah, you're going on up, ain't you? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm going on up, but chances are it'll be remanded back, I suspect, for I don't know how many times it's been remanded back, but the regional offices won't do their job.
Well,
and kind of a deal like Bertha there, where they remove the data you send them, and then after everybody looks at it, somebody sticks it back in. And every time they send a new claims folder, it's different. So I don't know which one is going to be the correct one, but I'm sure. I hope someone has to explain to the judge, now, which one of these models is the P under? Because somewhere here, there's something going on.
Right. Well, you know, and what Berta's talking about, I mean, any other area of law, I mean, that's essentially destroying evidence. I mean, maybe it wasn't destroyed. They would say it was misplaced, but...
well, that's spoliation of the claim.
That would, right. I mean, that's, yeah, exactly, spoliation of evidence, and it would be, almost an automatic win or for the... party who was, you know, for the victim of it. So, but
well,
again, we don't have that, unfortunately.
Yeah, but they should have, because that's a legitimate deal, and there's a lot of claims out there. I'm sure you've run across some yourself that you know is not complete, or something's been tampered with. It's not correct. The data's all wrong. It don't fit the scenario that it should.
Right.
And
right.
That would be spoliation of the claim and of, you know, of your claim. And that should actually, I would think, weigh, you know, throw the balance of the scale off towards the veteran and give him the break, because they shouldn't be allowed to tamper with that type of data.
Right. Well, and even in the situation going back to the fire, you know, someone who has in fact had their records destroyed and can't prove up their claim the way they need to due to, you know, an act of God and destruction of their fire, destruction of their records. You know, if I were the one creating the system, they would get a presumption of whatever statement they submitted. You know, if the VA cannot refute that in the absence of, you know, a personnel file, then, you know, the law says we're supposed to deem the veteran to be credible until proven otherwise, then that claim should be granted, even though he can't produce his personnel fire that did burn up. So,
well, actually, they have an enhanced duty to assist if SMRs and personnel records cannot be found for, you know, through a reasonable search.
Mm-hmm.
But when they say enhanced duty to assist, I mean, you know, it's like trying to get a remand due to severe illness from the BVA. I used to say, well, that's for World War II vets. You know, they're practically in a coma. I mean, you know, they're on their last legs. I mean, I'm butting in, guys.
No, you're fine.
No, here's one way,
Gerald, and I think this is, you know, as I've been looking at this and which way I want to go with appeals, the third lane, as they call it, I think, you know, I talked about the higher level review. Then you've got the NOD that'll kick you up to the BVA level. The third option, which this is one that I think a lot of people probably will use, and this is one that, in my reading of it, does still preserve the duty to assist for whatever that is worth, but is what they call a supplemental claim. You know, in the past we had reopened claims, right, where if a veteran doesn't preserve their appeal rights and get it their NOD filed in time or their Form 9 in time, then the appeal is over with, and they can reopen the claim at that point with new and material evidence. They have done away with that name. They now call it a supplemental claim, but a supplemental claim can actually be like an appeal under this new system in the sense that it still preserves your effective date. So if you... you know, right now you have to have new and material evidence to reopen. They tinkered with that a little bit, and now they call it new and relevant evidence. But if you submit new and relevant evidence within your 1 year of the ratings decision, then that's a supplemental claim, preserves your effective date, and Berta, you're probably not going to like this part of it. It remains at the regional office level. So, I really feel like that's an option that a lot of people are gonna take at least early on. Their goal with this whole thing was let's do away with the appeals backlog, right? So, and I think they will achieve that. They're gonna take their backlog that they used to have at the regional office, and they churned through those and got them to the appeals level. I think it's eventually going to just go back to the regional office level. Because I think a lot of people, you know, again, until we fund this properly and all that, there's going to be claims out there to be decided. So, but
it can work.
But I do like it because you can still paper the file, add things to it. And if it's, you know, if it's a situation where you just clearly were, you know, missing your nexus letter, or you were missing a personnel record or a stressor statement or whatever it may be, you can add that in at that point and get a new decision, which they're saying, you know, would be 120 days or something like that, which, again, we'll see. But we at least know you're not going to have to wait for your statement of case and then your appeal to be certified to the board and all that sort of stuff. So
it could work, Travis. I mean,
I'm somewhat excited about it. I mean, I think it's again, I'll hold total judgment until I see it in effect. But and again, a lot of these details have to be worked out with the CFR that'll be coming down the line. But I think that's going to be an option that a lot of folks are going to go with. Now, again, to your earlier point of if you go to the BVA, you know, it depends on what your case is about, if or why it was denied to begin with. If it was you were missing a key piece of evidence, then that's a good route to go. If it is, you know, they say that, you know, you get a decision that says ischemic heart disease is not presumptive, you know, you have to show actual Agent Orange exposure, something crazy like that. And that may be a little bit of an overstatement, but an issue of law, then you may want to go on to the BVA at that point. But they've given us, again, three different options. I really don't know why the higher level review option, where you stay at the agency level, but have no new evidence, to me, that's not a very attractive option. I would rather go to the board, because at the board, once you get to the board, you actually have three options as well. In terms of, you know, on your Form 9 now, you have to select if you want a hearing, and then you say if you want a video or in-person or travel board, which, by the way, there won't be any travel board hearings. And I think that will deal with some of the backlog there.
Yeah.
And video for most folks works just as well. But at the BVA level, you can either have no hearing with no evidence, which obviously is sort of a fast track, is the intent, or you can have a hearing where you submit evidence, or a third option would be submitting evidence but not having a hearing. And then I think you have 90 days from the date of your NOD to submit that evidence. So, and I think they're going to try to segment those again, you know, your hearing lane, your evidence only lane, and then your no hearing, no evidence lane. And if you've got a pure legal issue, that no hearing, no evidence lane, you shouldn't have to wait 5 years to you know, have your claim decided at that point, which that is an improvement. There's no reason to treat all appeals on the same track when some of them need more treatment than others do, you know. So, like I said, I think there's some good in there. If we were creating it, we would have – I know we all think we would have come up with something better, I'm sure. But
yeah. Well, it's sort of like what Benjamin Franklin said about the Declaration of Independence. It's not perfect, but it's all we've got. You know, and by the time it's perfected – Well, I'm wondering, Travis, if they will allow public comment in the Federal Register when they start, changing these regulations and amending Title 38. I would be surprised if they did not offer public comment, but, you never know what the VA is going to do.
Right. Well, I sure hope so. I mean, I think there's a lot that needs to be vetted here, I think there's a lot of information that all the veterans community could put in there. So I'm hoping that they'll take all that into consideration and allow for everybody to have a voice in the process at least.
Well, maybe, this fully developed claim process, that's an excellent one. If a veteran goes in with a pretty simple claim and he's got some expert help that understands the VA and how they operate. But I would suspect a lot of those at the moment are getting turned around to a regular claim process.
Right.
I have heard of some winning the fully developed claim process.
Oh, sure. We've had winners who had it.
Yes, we have.
But on the other hand, we've had FDC claims that did end up, with a long haul.
Yeah.
Out of the fully developed claim criteria.
You have to keep it very simple, I believe. Don't go in there with a complex claim and expect to be able to pull it off. I don't believe if you're just claiming perhaps diabetes and and you were in country in Vietnam, that should be, well, that's a presumptive anyway, but...
Well, it should be, but I actually had a denial on my AO, IHD death claim.
Uh-huh.
Right away, under NEMR, I'm under NEMR, and I could hardly believe what it said. It said that the Veterans Service Records, SMRs, do not reveal that he had IHD when he served in Vietnam. I filed a cue on them, and I reminded them they were kids. How many Vietnam in-country veterans actually could have even had the symptoms of ischemic heart disease when they were 19, 20 years old in Vietnam? And then I threw in a couple other things in my cue on them. Well, they fixed that right away. But
they could probably even catch that one, right?
Oh, my God. You know, Travis, I can't believe some of the stuff. I mean, good thing I have a sense of humor. Otherwise, I would have PTSD myself.
Right.
You know, from the claims process.
Well, I tell you, they love the cut-and-paste function on their computer.
You know, oh, indeed. And they love the CMP doctors. They love to Google right away and get the best citation, medical citation, and it can be from a real crappy outfit. But if it supports what they can say to deny the claim in the CME exam, they'll use that citation. I've seen them do it, and, you know, and it drives me crazy. But if a veteran sends the VA, you know, a citation from, you know, even the National Institute of Medicine or something, or Johns Hopkins University or something, the VA will say that it's just an internet reference, and they will not, you know, use that as supporting the veteran's claim.
But
I have one question, Travis, but I want to make a deal with you and John Basser and Gerald, because maybe I better ask this question if you can come back and do another show with us sometime.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. It's about your Atlanta, Georgia PTSD veteran. At the
okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a brilliant, brilliant, fabulous. And actually, I'll rattle off the question real quick anyhow.
Okay.
It says in March 2013, this is, it was remanded, and this is from the actual VBA decision. In March 2013, the veteran underwent a VA examination wherein the examiner noted that the veteran participated in combat activity but said that the veteran did not meet the DSM-5 criteria for PTSD. The examiner diagnosed mood disorder not otherwise specified, which obviously put that veteran into the crapper, because there's no mood disorder in DSM. We have a similar situation at our website. That vet has not come back for a while, but I think he was there yesterday. It was similar. They denied his PTSD claim, and I think he was a medic in Vietnam. I mean, to me, he had to have PTSD, but they denied it because he did not fulfill the DSM criteria in 5. But, of course, as you know, you don't have to fill the whole thing. And
right.
I think the examiner, when I read the CMP exam, the examiner led him questions which led to answers that the examiner used against him. Now, in part of me agrees that he did not fulfill that criteria. On the other hand, part of me says he should have gotten a PTSD award by now, which he hasn't yet. But my question was, it's an assumption, I may be wrong. I assume the board accepted the opinion he had from a private psychologist, and this claim was filed after July 2010 PTSD regulations,
mm-hmm.
you know, which depend on the PTSD diagnosis from the VA. I assume the BVA accepted the private opinion because in the award you got, it seemed like the 2006 VA opinion was a redo by the same examiner who did not find evidence of PTSD in the first exam. Does that make any sense to you, or should we leave that for another show?
Well, I mean, I'm always happy to talk about PTSD claims. It opens up a whole can of worms. But but no, you're exactly right. I mean, if it's the in that case, we got a private medical opinion, psychological opinion, and I think the key in that one was how thorough the exam was. We had them run through an entire battery of testing, the full gamut of psychological tests, and then just contrast that with the when the examiner does it the way that it's supposed to be done according to their board certification, you know, in psychiatry, or if they're a psychologist, you know, they're regulating bodies outside of VA, but within their own profession, these C&Ps can't stand up to it. And that was, I think, the case here. You know, I mean, this particular individual, had, you know, very traumatic events and clear stressors in country, and actually, I think, is that the one they ended up finding they diagnosed originally with the mood disorder, presenting as depression, and I think that actually ended up being rolled into or secondary to the PTSD. So, because that was another issue we had to deal with there was, he has this other diagnosis. Well, doc, wouldn't that be secondary to the PTSD that he has? So,
yeah, that was in the, I've got it in front of me. The order was service connection for a psychiatric disability to include PTSD and major depressive disorder is granted. They did the private opinion did it far better than the VA could, in my opinion, could ever do.
Right.
The problem is, and there were only about 600 or 800 veterans and lawyers and people like me who fought over that 2010 regulation, because the VA's point was, if you don't get a PTSD diagnosis from an NH professional, your claim is shot down the road, you know.
Right.
But of course, that opens the door for any type of mental health disability disorder. There's numerous court cases on that. But in some cases, I think a private opinion would be well worth the money for a lot of these PTSD vets that are the VA is, you know, really jerking around. And I'm sure I recommended to the vet how to do that, but still there were a few things there that you know, sometimes these vets, they're not prepared for the C&P exam. Well, it is stressful enough to go to one on top of having a stress disorder.
Exactly.
You know, and sometimes they'll say all these things about their childhood or this and that, and a lot of times service officers do not prepare them. I want to say that no one should ever lie at a PTSD exam or any C&P exam, but they have to be wary of the pitfalls that exam could bring if they're not careful. They've got to focus on their stressor.
Right. You were on that call I had with my client yesterday? This is the exact conversation I had before his in preparing him for his C&P exam.
No kidding. No kidding.
And just, you know, that they go in there and either one of two things: take it at totally face value that this doctor is here to, you know, assist me with my claim and find out what's really going on with me, or others are so distrustful of the whole process that they don't open up enough to reveal anything to the examiner. So both of those are problematic, but yeah, I mean, it's hard in a PTSD situation. I mean, to, like you say, they may start talking about other unrelated, non-service related difficulties in their life, but
yeah.
But it all, you know, you can't compartmentalize this stuff. One thing, sure, he's more depressed now because he's going through a divorce, but guess why he's getting divorced?
Right.
It's because he has outbursts of anger, he has poor judgment, and those are all direct results of his PTSD. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a vicious cycle.
We're totally out of time here.
Oh,
so
no.
I think it's through recording. Can you come back on, Travis?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I've enjoyed it talking with you
we'll,
guys.
Let's see. We'll have to set up a date and time, and I'll get with you. Usually we have our shows on Thursdays. It seems to work out good. But... And we can complete this.
Okay,
and,
sounds good.
It might be a couple of weeks, but we'll get you back on here. And,
all right.
Berta, I thank you for calling in.
Oh, that's okay, Gerald.
By golly, you give us a lot of good information there.
Well, unfortunately, it's from a lot of the...
Well, from
experience.
A lot of misery.
Yeah, well, I'm a hardcore claimant.
Oh, yeah.
And my husband's death taught me a lot.
Well, you know.
You know, a wrongful death, I mean. And that's another thing, too, we could talk about. Area 1151.
Yeah.
Not Area 51. Area 1151.
But that's another
problem there, that the latest news. You know, Shulkin was asked. Yesterday on Fox News about these new reports coming out of GAO. I told Jeff Miller about this crap years ago when he was chairman of HVAC. And Shulkin very skillfully avoided that new scandal. But he did talk about some other things, too. And I mentioned that in the letter to him, that although he did avoid Steve Doocy's questions on Fox News, there was a big banner at the bottom of the TV of the latest scandal of how VA is not properly reporting malpracticing doctors to the NPDB. And, that's another show and a half right there.
Yeah, that's...
I'm going to let you guys go because it's almost my bedtime. Travis,
okay.
It was nice meeting you. And John,
well,
John, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. And I'll let you guys go, Gerald. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you all
buddy.
Of you, and glad to be a part of this.
We'll have you back on and continue this. This hour goes quick, and we might do an hour and a half next time.
We did a two-hour
I'll schedule for a two-hour show. Matter of fact, I'm going to come to the doctor next week, girl, and do it then.
Well, sometimes I feel like it's been 10 hours. But anyway, thanks for coming on, and I don't guess it'll do any good to sign off. Nobody going to hear us. So,
no, it will shut her down.
We'll just shut her down. We talk till we run out of gas. All right. Okay, we'll talk to y'all later and have a good night for the rest of it and have a great weekend.
All right, same to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.